refer to a green roof, it's an extensive or shallow one, as opposed to intensive or having soil depth of usually well over a foot. So they're deep planters. And usually we're sort of referring to extensive, about this kind of a range of soil depth with extensive green roof. Here in the U.S., Chicago leads the way in terms of incentivized construction with a committed 2.5 million square feet of green roofs. This is Chicago City Hall. And here in Austin, we're just getting started. And that is, some of you may know of this, is the mezzanine level of the Starbucks, the Scartman Center. One of the early ones that got going here in Austin. Why green roofs? They address a broad range of concerns in one beautiful package. They are an architectural low-tech answer, one answer, to many of the energy, resource, and environmental issues that confront us. From a quality of life standpoint, they offer a potential usable amenity as planted rooftop space. They provide habitat for wildlife, boosting the available living quarters for a variety of bird and invertebrate species in urban or developed areas. They directly reconnect humans to nature and its processes. Green roofs help to filter and clean the air, much the way a meadow or park space does. Generally, they cool or temper the air as well through plants' evapotranspiration. They act as thermal and sound buffers for ambient and interior spaces. They dramatically increase the longevity of roof membranes by protecting materials from UV rays and expansion and contraction brought on by daily temperature swings. From the perspective of sustainability, green roofs stand to make significant improvements to our use of resources. They lighten the conditioning load required to cool and heat buildings, reducing energy consumption, and save roof replacement, reducing material consumption. Thus, once we figure out how to lower their initial cost, green roofs confer a definitive financial benefit. Finally and critically, this is Seattle City Hall, if you all can read that. Green roofs promise many advantages as an active agent in the flows of water. They dampen the effects of rainfall surges, curbing associated stormwater runoff problems. They filter water as well, taking particulates out of the atmosphere into the substrate where they can be sequestered by plants. Green roofs are sponges on the scale of a building, open to the sky. As such, they are capable to some degree of absorbing water and doing things with it on site, keeping it local, so to speak, rather than following the conventional urban methodology in which it is escorted as quickly as possible off-site into storm sewers, into the urban creek system and rivers downstream, and eventually into oceans, bypassing needy watersheds along the way. Green roofs, then, can make a worthy contribution to the well-being and healing of our natural environment by being an active player in the cycles and systems that function within it, rather than being an inert surface. This is a local one that we just got planted probably 2 months ago, so it's still filling in. How do green roofs fit into the bigger picture as we face a formidable transition to alternative models of development and uses of the precious resources we have? With respect to water, we can start by looking at the hydrologic cycle, which I'm sure you all are familiar with, to tell us the essential story of how we and the rest of the living earth are supported by the paths water takes. Honing in on the land-based portions of the diagram, we note that evaporation and transpiration, one of the primary mechanisms of plant life, produce cloud formations which produce precipitation. We see that greener landscapes help keep water in the loop. On the other end, at the ground level, greater porosity in the landscape does its part to help to keep water in the loop, allowing infiltration and making water available for uptake by plants. What accounts for interruptions in the hydrologic cycle? On a basic level, we break the loop with added heat, lost water, and contamination. Urbanization, in its many facets, is the main culprit, its effects familiar and widespread. Impervious cover, darker surfaces, and polluting agents serve to generate heat, cast off water, and manufacture atmospheric aberrations. Erosion happens. This is, before I change slides, the same intersection, which is fascinating. Erosion happens with stormwater runoff, erosion happens with stormwater runoff, and our urban creeks, if they are not already channelized in concrete, deteriorate, unable to provide slow, meandering places for water to re-enter urban watersheds. Paved surfaces increase ambient temperatures, further stressing existing vegetation. The urban heat island effect and global climate warming create mutually antagonizing and escalating conditions in our city. How can we restore these breaks in the hydrologic cycle while counteracting the urban heat island effect since they go hand in hand? Crafting a green infrastructure that branches out into the fabric of our cities and suburbs, neighborhood by neighborhood, would tackle problems in a comprehensive way while engaging communities. Chains of rain gardens, planted streetscapes. Let's see some of these pictures. This is a C Street, quote, C Street in Seattle, a kind of pilot project done by the Seattle Public Utility. Street Edge Alternative is what that acronym stands for, and a very interesting project that does, there are all kinds of win-wins involved with that. Maybe some of you all are familiar with that project. Chains of rain gardens, planted streetscapes, green roofs, urban forests, bio-infiltration devices, restored waterways, riparian and wetland areas would all be integrated and implemented in a phased plan. The relentless impervious cover that characterizes our urban landscapes would break down in strategic places to admit water and relieve thermal gain. So it's a rain garden. This quote I thought was wonderful. I'll just give you a minute to read that. Green roofs offer this boost of additional green landscapes, landscape where there would not otherwise be. Green roofs become urban sponges instead of dirty dishes. If taken on at a broader scale, they can help offset the urban heat island effect and restore, and restore moisture to the atmosphere, easing energy demand and mending the broken water cycle. With their high profile and inherent interest factor, green roofs have the ability to incite the public imagination and spur political will. They could become the poster project of an ambitious green infrastructure program. Incentives for their construction would draw from any number of eligible sources since they solve so many problems, so many pieces. They solve pieces of so many problems. Most importantly, they would not be isolated to a niche market and an indulgence for high-budget projects, but fit as an integrated part of a larger puzzle and offer great views at the same time. I have another quote here. I thought was also nice. People tend to, people as in maybe our society tends to look to the big companies or want big, you know, high-tech solutions, and this is speaking to the idea that it's lots of little low-tech solutions and involvement in a grassroots basis. Championing green roofs means seeing them in a regional perspective. Genuinely effective solutions often require involvement and control by local stakeholders who are most familiar with the ways and workings of their place. Austin, in our view, has the potential to be a leader in applying this technology, an exemplar for other locations which have similar environmental or climatic characteristics. It is geographically unique, sitting on the Balcones Fault at the nexus of different ecotones, and its climate is challenging, with a rainfall regime often characterized by extreme storms and droughts. Austin's reputation as a major player in the green building movement informs its civic identity, and its cultural heritage is largely inflected by its identification with the iconic Barton Springs and the Edwards Aquifer. Water quality and amenities figure prominently in the values of Austin's residents. Although some have voiced skepticism about more green roofs in Austin here. Although some have voiced skepticism about the viability of green roofs given our environmental realities, and Austin's Watershed Protection Department has resisted giving their nod of approval as a stormwater control device, trial studies have been generated, projects have proceeded, and grassroots interest is strong and persistent. If we can establish not a single boilerplate design for an Austin green roof, but a set of green roof best practice guidelines suggesting a range of design options that vary according to stated goals, we will crack this nut. We can then be in a position not only to offer the world green roof success stories from this bioregion, but tie into a robust green infrastructure program that improves Austin as a whole, its interwoven natural and built environments. Green roofs can cool, green roofs can blossom, and green roofs could be part of the cure for what ails us. That's where I'll end, so we have time for some questions. And that's just as Dylan had just described earlier, we've been around for about 3 years, give or take, and we're just a very amenable and flexible organization that's open to, we gave a wonderful panel earlier this year trying to bring stakeholders together. We had a lot of wonderful, we had five panelists. Mark Simmons from the Wildflower Center was one of them, and it was very productive. We're in the middle of writing that up, and I'm looking forward to sort of a series of panels to really get at that kind of Austin best practice, Green Roof best practice scenario. So that's it.
What type of engineering, like retrofits, would be necessary for current buildings to become under, like, structural support for extensive green roofs?
Can I see who's speaking? Okay, that'll help. You're asking about structural retrofits?
Yes.
Okay, so this kind of talks to what I mentioned just recently about figuring out what your goals are for a green roof and not having pat answers for everything. If you have an existing building and it's got a certain amount of reserve structural capacity, you might be able to do a green roof without having to augment your structure. At the minimum, you're going to have to get a structural engineer to evaluate the situation, see if it can take 30 pounds a square foot of fully saturated weight, say, for a green roof about this deep. But if we can come to a variety of different kinds of green roofs, some of which are maybe even shallower, that exponentially increases the potential for a lot of different other kinds of buildings to have green roofs. They would function differently. They wouldn't be as moist or as cool. They wouldn't have as much insulatory capability, but they would do something. And so I don't know if that really answered fully your question, but you would at least have to get a structural engineer to look at the situation on a case-by-case basis. And I should just throw in, too, that for a lot of new buildings, obviously new construction is where you can really kind of just get all that taken care of at once. But oftentimes they oversize to some degree anyway for just sort of typical modern practice.
You have a whole way of thinking about the stormwater management issue that could be encapsulated under low impact development. Instead of making the stuff go away as expeditiously as possible, utilizing it within the watershed. I've used the catchphrase retain, don't drain for this sort of approach. What are your thoughts on how we get the hidebound bureaucracy to start moving in that direction, if not wholesale adopting that direction?
I'll just say a quick word and I'll let some others answer. I think one thing that occurs to me is it would be very instructive just to see how other cities have gotten on board with being more progressive than we. I mean, we do have a reputation here in Austin for being pretty green, but we could definitely be more, a lot greener. So looking at examples for, hey, these people did it, you know, and here's how they did it. So that's one way.
What we find and what was one of the big results of our stakeholder panel that we held in March is that there is a sense in Austin of a need for real certainty about best practices and about results and having a lot of data before moving forward in creating a green infrastructure or a low-impact development before basically codifying that sort of intervention. So whereas what we're seeing in Portland, Oregon, has been, they're one of the big adopters of green roofs, and they've put in a lot of incentives and really worked on green roofs as a part, as one, you know, one piece of a low-impact development array. They were very willing to basically jump in with both feet without a whole lot of data, saying, here is the exact nutrient profile of every possible soil you could use in a green roof. Here's what its effect would be on a sensitive watershed. Here's how it would affect salmon. They basically said, hey, this looks good, and offered some zoning incentives right off the bat. So it's partly that we see Austin as being a real cautious municipality, and it's political in that sense. The good thing that we do see is that the Department of Watershed Protection Development Review does have codified some low-impact development measures that are accepted, that if you go into the plan and you've got vegetated filter strips, they'll look at that. And they are willing to look at green roofs on a case-by-case basis right now, not yet adding that to the menu of low-impact development initiatives that they will accept off the bat, but they are willing to look at it. So I think you're right to say that it is part of a larger low-impact development scenario, and that's, we sort of see it as a poster child for that kind of an approach.
There certainly are certain benefits to to green roofs, but I just wondered, compared to conventional roofs, how do they compare in terms of initial cost and then ongoing operations and maintenance? Are they cheaper? Or it's hard for me to believe that they would be, because you need a much stronger structure to support something that's that heavy. And many current roofs will last for 50 years without almost any maintenance. So I just wondered if you've done any research on that.
There's tons of research out there on that. The upfront costs are more expensive, but you know, they do things such as extend the roof life 2 to 3 times on average. So over time, this roof will overpay for itself. So the sun is a roof's membrane's worst enemy. So protecting the roof membrane with the soil and plants allows it to last about 2 to 3 times longer. You're also going to get energy savings. The actual energy cost of cooling or heating a given building, because the green roof provides a mechanical insulation, if you would. That upfront cost can be. We don't have specifics on that because every green roof is different, but it can be as much as twice as much, but it will absolutely pay for itself over time.
Go ahead. Okay, I just had actually just a comment. I wanted to give a plug for some sort of a best practices document or maybe life cycle cost analysis. I think that would really help the market transformation and adoption of this. I think it's great. In the San Francisco Bay Area, we've seen a few projects, some pilots, but we've seen probably just as many failures as successes because maybe not done right. And then, of course, there's the rumor mill and the fear and not sure really what went wrong, and people have been worried about mold from green roofs and other things. So I think having a tool that would give information out to the professionals as well as the consumer looking to do it would be good, especially with some of these new roof coatings that are helping with the greenhouse gas and the heat source effect. And of course, maybe you'd work green roofs into solar, but I really feel that if you can get all the market of the Portland and Austin and other areas and those that are doing it, get a little money to put a tool out there that would really answer those questions, I think the community would adopt it better.
I think that's really smart. One of the pieces that makes that more complex is that green roofs, the answer, we always joke that the answer to any green roof question is it depends. So we want to make sure that the recipe that we establish here in Austin for maybe if here's your green roof recipe if you're interested in slowing down stormwater is really bioclimatically appropriate to Austin in particular. Then there may be sister cities that would benefit from that, but we're not going to use the same soil, we're not going to use the same plants as a Chicago or as a Stuttgart or a Portland. So while we can learn from each other and we try, there's a subjectivity to the technology that makes it much more like less like a sand filter and more like a pond. So it's one of the things that we're absolutely interested in doing, and I think that our stakeholder panels that we'll be holding over the next year or so will start to establish. The idea would be to start to establish a kind of a best practices matrix.
There is a committee that is working on engineering. They have...
Hello? There is a committee in Germany. It was called the FLL Standards that has standards for building green roofs, and you know, to be able to prevent such things as these mold issues. And America is working. There's going to be a green roof conference in June, and they have they're working on those standards and creating that same booklet of standards for America. And as Dylan said, there are more specifics when you get into different zones and growing zones and temperature zones, but we are working on American standards as it is right now.
Assuming we're using vegetation appropriate to Austin, how do you mitigate fire risk?
It's actually been known to prevent fires with the higher mineral content in the soil matrices. It's actually been documented if the soil is kept wet enough to prevent the fires. I think Mark Simmons from Wildflower Center has been working with the fire marshal, and the fire marshal's supposedly, I don't know the whole story behind it, but he's gung-ho about it and isn't afraid of that fire potential. There was a test on, I think Ducks Unlimited did an actual fire test on a roof where they, as a maintenance practice, so it was kind of like this just crazy idea of let's just burn as a maintenance practice on top of this roof. And I haven't read too much about it, but Ducks Unlimited, if you want to Google it, it's got some good information on that.
Okay, I had a quick question about the suggested plant species for Central Texas. I guess could you elaborate on what type of plants you suggest planting?
Ooh, I'm having trouble seeing who's talking.
The Wildflower Center has really done a lot in that regard, and if you're looking for like a specific list right now, I guess I would tell you, I would refer you to their website and their Green Roof Trial Study. They have all the species with their Latin names listed. A lot of daisies, native flowering perennials. I was working with Mark Simmons here to establish a prairie grass regime on this roof. So we have some taller grasses and some shorter grasses that we fully expect to adapt to their environment by having more of a lateral spread, root spread, rather than a deeper one. A lot of this is just kind of like, let's just plant it and see. There's another kind of idea out there that maybe we establish different kinds of trial roofs all over people's carports, chicken coops, whatever, something that's not like, you know, as risky as potentially or as expensive as a house, and just maybe even for one of them put a substrate up there, a soil substrate, and see what lands and what spores, what kind of weeds even take, just to see on that end of the spectrum what likes to grow there. So, and on the other end of the spectrum, if you really want a high maintenance, almost like it's a garden down on the ground that you're tending, you could get all the way up into vegetables if you wanted to, you know, do something like more of a foot containerized kind of planter kind of model. So, there's some ground covers, grasses, and native flowering perennials, just to make it sort of more of a nutshell. They're good ones too.
Overall, we tend to favor a native and adapted approach. The Wildflower Center, of course, their mission is to advance the cause of native plants, so their list is exclusively native plants. What we would tend to say is, what do you want your green roof to do? And what plants are known on the ground to be able to deliver that sort of a function. So really looking at it in terms of that sort of a horticulture.
It's just directly connected to your depth in a soil matrix. We just did growers just held a tour of a green roof on a private office complex where there were live oaks up on this green roof. So anything is possible. It just depends, of course, you know, asking that first question of, well, how do you want your roof to perform and what do you want to grow, and just beginning there.
How much do you want to spend?
Yeah.
One question.
It seems like this would work well along with rainwater harvesting. I'm just wondering if you could comment a little bit on how that's you know, what's been done in that area and how well it works. And obviously, it's going to slow down the water getting into a rainwater harvesting. There probably won't be quite the same volume that it would, I would expect it to work quite well together.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We favor that approach. And of course, as, you know, individuals who are interested in sustainability on the whole wouldn't want to advocate a whole lot of potable water application on a roof. We've already got enough poorly designed irrigation systems in Central Texas. So rainwater is where we'd like people to start looking. Another good place to look would be air conditioning condensate. A lot of times your AC unit's going to be on your roof anyway. So that would be a source of water that would be available at the same time that you need it. So that would be another way to think about it. But in terms of what Lauren was getting at with the hydrologic cycle and repairing those breaks, ideally water would fall on your roof, be collected in a cistern, and then either used to be returned to the soil there on site or pumped back up onto your roof and reused again. It does, as you say, it does slow down and it can reduce the amount of water because, of course, the plants are using some of it. We want them to.
But then you're good with the benefits that that plant use provides. It's really, I think green roofs, when you look at it, it really is asking you to look at a much more holistic, overall, integrated kind of picture. Instead of just, but in the meantime, we do have to spend some time piecemealing things out and looking at, you know, this particular variable relationship to that and et cetera. But after that compartmentalizing and specializing, just bring it back in and, you know, really see the big picture and what a green roof can do despite costing more and everything else.